the Tan Talk Radio Network.
I thought love was only true in fairy tales, and for someone else, but not for me. Our love was out to get me. That's the way it seemed. Disappointment haunted all my dreams. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried.
Oh yeah. A little bit of our buddies, the Monkees. Do you remember them? I think there's only two of them left, Ed. Mickey Dolenz and I think the blonde-haired guy, but I don't remember his name, to be honest with you. Maybe wrong about... I know Dolenz is alive, anyway. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, along with my buddy Big Ed Davis. We thank you very much for being with us. It is Friday, July the 30th. Wow, this month has flown by, as far as I'm concerned. We'll be talking in a few minutes with Trita Parsi of the Quincy Institute, and we're going to talk about the potential of withdrawing troops from Iraq, U.S. troops from Iraq. Are they going to do that? You know, we did it in Afghanistan, right? We're going to do the same thing now in Iraq. Is that the idea? We'll find out what Trita Parsi thinks about all of that. And the Tampa Bay Times, it has run a hit piece on our governor here in Florida, Ron DeSantis. Not really on him, but on his press secretary. Now, the question is, what's that all about? Why did they do that? We're going to get some thoughts about that. We're going to tell you the story and then get some thoughts about it from the proprietor of the barber pole, the inimitable Andrew Ceraci, a little bit later in the show. Also, a host of federal virus relief programs are biting the dust. They are ending, like moratoriums on rental evictions, and, you know, those extra unemployment checks. Is that a good thing? Should we continue with these COVID virus relief programs? We're going to talk about that as well. And in our ultimate top 10, we have a goodie for you. If you believe in climate change, and there is obviously the climate is changing from time to time, the top 10 countries least likely to be disrupted by climate change. Do you think the United States might be one of them? Do you buy into climate change? Well, anyway, we're going to take a look at the top 10 countries, so stay tuned for that. We are sponsored in part, by the way, by Andrew's Master Barbershop. And you guys, I keep saying this, but it is true. I have never found a better barber in Tampa Bay for a haircut than Andrew the Master Barber and his crew. They are in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580. I should say Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580 in the Overcash Plaza. Call them first for your appointment, please, 727-733-3773. And while we're at it, isn't it great to have Paul and Tracy Allen back on Good Morning Clearwater? Although Tony did a wonderful job, it's great to have them back. They were in Toledo. Anyway, Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 a.m., you got to hear Paul and Tracy Allen. Good Morning Clearwater here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. All right. So, we're going to talk a little bit about it later on, but the coronavirus relief programs are beginning to expire. And that's going to... what are these Democrats in Congress going to do? Well, for one thing, Nancy Pelosi is mandating that everybody around the area wear masks. So what happens? Dozens of Republicans from the House, and their staffers as well, went wandering out of the House onto the Senate floor without any masks on. Now, if they had mandated clothing, do you think all of these House Republicans would walk out of the House and onto the Senate floor without any clothes on, just to spite Nancy Pelosi? I suspect they might. But they went over there maskless. The lawmakers and their staffers You know, they go through that underground thing. Do you remember how they walked when they went to impeach Donald Trump and how they brought the letters of impeachment, and they went under the tunnel, remember, from the House side to the Senate side with this very solemn look on their faces? Remember that? I mean, everybody was laughing at them, of course. But in the meantime, they probably used that same tunnel to go over there without the masks. Prior to the migration over to the Senate, Congressman Chip Roy of Texas motioned to adjourn the House in protest against the mask mandate. They say that Pelosi came along and did that. Now, apparently, you can be arrested by the Capitol Police if you don't wear your mask. I don't think I've heard of anybody yet being arrested. This whole thing with the masks, I mean, I finally got a shot. Ed got a shot. A lot of people that we know got a shot. And we thought that once we got the shot, we were told we're pretty much invulnerable to getting the disease. I know there's a variant, but they are still saying that that shot should protect us. And all of a sudden now, we're all supposed to mask up again. In the meantime, the principal deputy press secretary for Biden, her name is Karine Jean-Pierre, declined to directly answer a question as to why the Biden administration justifies asking vaccinated people to wear masks while the Border Patrol down south is releasing coronavirus-infected migrants into the Texas border town there. Isn't that a little hypocritical? I would say so. Here is the question that was posed to Jean-Pierre. You talked about this administration having a priority of protecting the American people. Can you help us understand why it is that the federal government is asking vaccinated Americans to wear masks to stop the spread of COVID-19, but at the same time, federal agents are also releasing COVID-19 border crossers into Texas, you know, into the small towns of Texas? Well, good old Jean-Pierre said, well, let's step back for a second. And then a fire alarm apparently went off, which the questioner suggested was probably triggered by his question. Probably was. Then Jean-Pierre said she would try to give him a 30,000-foot view of the situation. Went on to describe the process placing some migrants into alternative programs rather than detention. Anyway, it's hypocritical, is it not? I think that the Biden should not get up there in front of people like he did yesterday and start demanding that we all get our masks out of the closet again while he is not finishing the security of the border by building that wall. It's very, very, very frustrating and hypocritical of him. Now, having said that, I thought Biden looked a little more awake. I thought Biden looked a little more awake than usual. Ed, I know you're not a big follower of all the press conferences because they're boring.
What time of day was the press conference?
The press conference was on around 4, but I think he started, I'm going to guess, around 4:30.
Okay, so he had the mid-afternoon nap.
He had his mid-afternoon nap.
Okay, so, well, yeah, he's a little frisky after that.
He was
that.
More frisky. I have to say that he was, he was reading everything.
Of course, I mean,
but
it has to be.
He can still screw up reading, and he did a fairly good job. Then they did ask him some questions. He stood around for about 3 or 4 questions. He made sure he got all the liberal questions. You know, he was looking around.
Sure. Yeah.
But there were screams. I'll say one thing. It used to be that nobody would scream at him with questions, you know.
And you notice when he is reading, there'll be times where he'll either pull on his earlobe
I know what
or
you're
scratching next to his nose. Now, either that, one of those, you know, like a baseball sign, is either meaning speed it up or slow it down.
Well,
one or the other.
And there are people that are saying that he does have things being fed into his ear. He's got a little earpiece in there. I have joked about it because I would find it very hard to listen to somebody talking to you to say, hey, Joe, here's the answer to this, you know, while you're trying to talk at the same mm-hmm. time, right? It would, I mean, for Joe Biden, well, that would be a major accomplishment.
There's times I've talked in your ear when it doesn't go over the air while you're speaking or something.
Yeah,
like
but
that.
I'm a professional.
Well, you think all that, all those years in office, he'd be a professional by now. But.
Yeah, well, he got to the point where the professional bit is leaving him, yeah. and the acuity issues are confronting.
Paul
him.
Said earlier today said that he started to do the whisper thing again.
Yes,
and then it was
and
almost
stop
like
of it.
It was almost like somebody in his ear said,
"Don't
knock
do that,
that out. Stop it."
Yes,
yeah,
you're right. You're right. So he took a few questions, and they were all screaming at him at this point. I must say, at least now. You know, I was worried when nobody would, you know, when Trump was up there, it was nothing but screaming, even when Trump was trying to answer the question, right? And now with Biden, all of a sudden, the reporters are indeed throwing things at him. He's going to be forced to answer more questions, I think, as we go along here. I would say the honeymoon will always be there, but there's some bickering going on during the honeymoon. Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll put it that way. All right.
I got them. $1.9 trillion, really.
You know, that sounds like something when you're asleep and having a nightmare.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Trita Parsi of the Quincy Institute about the U.S. policy in Iraq.
Yeah.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
Go yard is a metaphor used in baseball, meaning to hit a home run. Life's struggles can make you feel like you just struck out. It's times like these that we need a little batting practice to pick ourselves back up and get back in the game. Whether you are dealing with marital issues, drug addiction, rebellious teens, anxiety, depression, or just generally having a bad day, call Mama Mac. If life has you down 0-2, before you strike out, learn to go yard. Go yard with Mama Mac on this radio station, Thursdays, 6 o'clock.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on a Friday. Thank you so very much for joining us and being with us. Delighted to have Trita Parsi join us. He is an executive vice president of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. He's also an expert, by the way, on the, I guess you could call it the geopolitics of the Middle East. He has penned many a book. One of them, I guess his latest one, Losing an Enemy, Obama, Iran, and the Triumph of Diplomacy. Welcome, Trita, to FreedomWorks.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is absolutely our pleasure. We want to talk to you about what we are doing in Iraq. Now, we've got, if I'm not mistaken, around, 2,500, 3,000 U.S. soldiers there right now. We pulled out basically for all intents and purposes from Afghanistan, Biden policy. Are we going to do the same thing now in Iraq?
We should, but it doesn't seem like that's going to happen as soon as I think many would like it to. The announcement that came earlier this month indicates that instead of actually pulling the troops out, we're changing the name of their mission and doing some definitional exercises rather than actually pulling them out. Now, understandably, this is a complex situation. I think just a straight withdrawal immediately is probably not the wisest thing to do. But there needs to be an agreement with the Iraqi government on a phasing out of U.S. troops there, not just redefinition of what we call their mission, which is apparently what is taking place right now. I still hold out some hope because I believe that the review of the U.S. force posture done by Secretary Austin likely will come down to a conclusion that we do need to remove a very significant number of troops in the Middle East. The question is, will that include Iraq or not? In my view, it absolutely should, because most of our troops right now are not fulfilling any other function in Iraq than being sitting ducks.
Okay, I was going to ask you that. What is going on in Iraq as far as any kind of conflict?
Well, you have a prime minister that is trying to keep together his own coalition, is facing very severe challenges. He's someone that, from the U.S. side, we have better relations with. But you also have a very complex situation with many of these different militias, many of them supported by Iran, but not controlled by Iran, who are increasingly developing their own interests and their own agendas that are not the same as that of the Iranians. So, for instance, many of them are attacking U.S. troops. They're seeking revenge for the killing, not so much of Soleimani that Trump committed, but the fact that Mr. Mohandas, who was a leader of many of these militias, was also killed in that attack. So their interest in trying to exact the revenge for that on the U.S. side seems to be growing, and they want to do it before the U.S. manages to leave. That interest seems to clash with that of the Iranians that right now wants to see a bit more calm in Iraq because they don't want the situation in Iraq to complicate the nuclear negotiations.
Yeah.
But the narrative in Washington seems to be that whenever there is an attack in Iraq, more or less it is ascribed to the Iranians, even though our own intelligence makes it quite clear that the situation is much more complex than that.
Sure. Now, Iran and Iraq have maintained a border, but at the same time, it's kind of like, I guess, the Palestinians and the Jewish people. There doesn't seem to be any hope that these two countries will ever agree on much. One of the reasons is that they have different Muslim religious doctrines, I guess, to some extent. So is it still a kind of a religious thing? At least it seems to be with Iran.
Well, the Iranians and the Iraqis have been rivals for 3,000 plus years, whether Iraq has been called Babylonia or Assyria and Iran has been Persia. These have been two of the most powerful states in the region, and as a result, they've oftentimes been in rivalry. And of course, they fought an extremely bloody war between 1980 and 1988, which is, not too far away, distant in the history. At the same time, they have managed to develop much closer relations in the last years, since the U.S. invasion of Iraq. And the Iranians have taken significant advantage of the fact that the majority of the Iraqis are actually Shia Iraqis, the same religious sect as the Iranians. Many of them spent their exiled years out of Iraq, inside of Iran, were trained by the Iranians, and have a degree of political and religious affinity to the Iranians. On the other hand, there's a significant Sunni population who has a very different perspective on the Iranians, but they're not in power right now. They're not a majority,
right.
Not in the same position of influence as they were during the time of Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, Saddam Hussein.
It's a dynamic situation, so what we see right now may not be what will be the situation in Iraq 10, 15, 20 years from now.
So it depends to some extent on whether you're a Sunni or a Shiite in Iraq. So is it still, all of this, is it still basically founded in religion, religious feelings, or is there more to it? Well, I know there's more to it.
I think there's quite a bit more to
it.
The religious affiliation is not something that can be ignored, and particularly for certain segments of the population, that might be the most important thing. But you have Shiite groups in Iraq that are extremely hostile to Iran, who view themselves as more as Iraqi nationalists or Arab nationalists. You have Kurdish Sunnis that have a different relationship with Iran that is far more positive than that of some Arab Sunnis. So just looking at it from a religious perspective, will not only give you an incomplete picture, it will give you a largely inaccurate picture because it is one out of many variables. And the key thing, I think, from our perspective here in the United States is we don't fully understand this, and it doesn't affect our interests.
Mm-hmm.
Our interest in this region is diminishing, and we actually do not need to have any permanent military bases in the region to protect the limited interest that we have.
Right. Now, we've always...
Now, we're there. Mm-hmm. We're really not doing ourselves any favor whatsoever.
We've always been involved in the politics of Iraq and Iran. It seems like, obviously, with the... back in the 50s with the Shah of Iran. Then he was overthrown. And there was a great deal of animosity towards the United States because of our propping that guy up. And there was a lot of things wrong with the Shah of Iran. So we've always had fingers in the Mideast. Is Biden less inclined, do you think? He's been in Washington for so long. Is he less inclined to be involved in these countries now, like Iraq and Iran?
In my view, he's not sufficiently less inclined, not quite yet. It may change. I mean, I want to give him credit for the pullout out of Afghanistan, which, of course, the Trump administration began. There was a lot of fears that Biden would ignore the agreement to withdraw, and fortunately, he did not, and the troops aren't coming home right now. But at the same time, I think the type of clear-eyed, strong, decisive pullout that I think is necessary, I'm not 100% sure we will get. I don't want to completely dismiss the likelihood that it could happen because Austin's review is not out there. But I know there's a struggle inside of the administration right now. So it is not an administration that is completely one that has one view on this matter. And there's plenty of people in this administration in Washington who, for reasons that are somewhat inexplicable to me, want the United States to be permanently based in the Middle East, regardless of what happens,
right,
regardless of how unsuccessful we ultimately have been with our policy in the region.
We're talking with Preeta Parsi. He is the Executive Vice President of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. He's also an expert on what's going on in the Middle East. He's penned a lot of books. His latest was Losing an Enemy, Obama, Iran, and the Triumph of Diplomacy. And by the way, speaking about that, the nuclear deal with Iran, a lot of people think that that thing, by the way, being fashioned, of course, in the Obama administration, is really just a paper tiger nuclear deal. What do you think of it?
No, I think that's a rather inaccurate way of describing it. There's frankly not been another nuclear agreement that was tougher than this one in terms of the extent of the inspections regime when it comes to the restrictions that were imposed on the Iranians. And I think it's also quite clear that the Trump administration thought that by just imposing more sanctions, they would get a better deal, and they didn't. Let me just give you one example. Thanks to the nuclear deal, 98% of all of Iran's nuclear material, the low-enriched uranium, was shipped out of the country. They had less than 300 kilos of it.
But how do we know that?
We know that because we have cameras inside of Iran's nuclear program as a result of this deal, and because the IAEA was present in every element and every phase of their nuclear program. So that has been verified over and over again. It's
okay.
Even been certified by the Trump State Department. Mm-hmm. Now, because of the combination of these different things, it meant that if the Iranians were to be so foolish to make a decision to build a nuclear bomb, it would still take them 12 months undetected in order for them to be able to have the material for a bomb. Undetected. Now, because of the inspections, they would get detected, but let's assume that they weren't detected, it would still take them 12 months. Because of us pulling out during Trump, that period has shrunk from 12 months to roughly 2 months. And now we have far less inspections and we have far less confidence that it would be undetected.
But wasn't Trump...
Absolutely disastrous situation.
Okay. But wasn't Donald Trump saying that we weren't allowed in to some of the sites to really find out what was going on? I mean, Iran decided what we could see and what we could not, and how could we trust them? There was concern that they were continuing to build and get closer and closer to nuclear capability, especially during the Obama administration, that they were basically doing all kinds of things. How could we know for sure? How could we ever trust them? I mean, we would agree, I'm sure you would agree, they want to build a nuclear bomb, don't they?
Actually, the U.S. intelligence itself has been quite clear on the fact that the Iranians have been pursuing the option of a nuclear weapon. But the actual political decision to build a nuclear weapon has not been made. That doesn't mean that it couldn't be made.
But you don't think that the mullahs, et cetera, there want a nuclear weapon?
No, listen carefully to what I was saying here.
Sure.
There's a quite significant difference.
Okay.
The Shah of Iran was pursuing the same policy, having the option, meaning they have the nuclear material, they have the nuclear know-how, but they don't build the bomb unless something really bad happens in which they would need a nuclear bomb. But they don't make that decision until that bad thing happens. And the reason for that is because there's a lot of strategic detriments of building a nuclear weapon. You would get under massive sanctions, all kinds of different things. So just to give you an example, the Iranians have had a nuclear program since the 1960s. The United States actually helped them build that nuclear program. Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, back in the Ford administration, was lobbying the Shah of Iran. You have to have a nuclear weapon, and you have to buy our nuclear reactors to have that. Sorry, a nuclear program. You have to buy our nuclear reactors to do so. And they've been having that nuclear program for more than 50 years. Still, they don't have a nuclear weapon. The Pakistanis went from nothing to a nuclear weapon in 9.5 years. Why is that different? Is it that the Iranians don't have the capacity, they don't have a smart of engineers? Not at all. Because their calculation is very, very different from that of the Pakistanis. The Pakistanis are sitting right next to massive India, who had nuclear weapons, and they were in a nuclear arms race with the Indians. And as a result, their intent to build a nuclear weapon was very clear, and they went for it.
But what about Israel? Israel has is somewhat like that Pakistan-India thing. We got Israel and Iran. And Israel has a nuclear weapon.
Israel is a rather tiny country, 6 million people. Iran is 85 million people, much more massive country. And the Iranians have their own deterrence against Israel through Hezbollah and their alliances that they built in the region. So the only thing I actually think would cause the Iranians to go and make that political decision to build a nuclear weapon is the threat that they would perceive from the United States. None of the other states in the region have the capacity of threatening the Iranians in such a way that they don't have a deterrence against it. The main threat from Pakistan is not Pakistan's nuclear weapons. It's instability and the potential collapse of the Pakistani state. That's much more of a danger.
Okay.
The Taliban, of course, major enemies of Iran, but they don't have anything even close to nuclear weapons.
Well, Trita,
the Israelis do have it, but the Iranians have Hezbollah. They have 100,000 rockets and missiles stationed in Lebanon as a deterrent against the Israelis if the Israelis were to do something like that.
Trita, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk with you about this. Very, very interesting. I hope you're right, by the way, that Iran is not planning for sure to build one and, you know, just keeping it open as an option. But thank you so very much for...
Can I just say one thing?
Yes, please, go ahead.
The purpose of the nuclear deal was to make sure that they wouldn't have the option, that we're taking the option away from them, because that's the point. Even if they haven't made a decision, that's not good enough. We don't want them to have an option, and that's what the point of the...
Do you think... Let me ask you this, as long as we're continuing. Do you think that Israel... If they sensed that Iran was just about ready with a nuclear weapon, do you think Israel might do something about it on their own?
I think the Israeli calculation is a little bit different. The Israeli calculation of attacking Iran would be in order to force the United States to get into the war, because the Israelis don't have the capacity themselves to take out the nuclear program. The times the Israelis were thinking about doing it was not because the Iranians were on the verge of getting a bomb. It was actually because the Iranians and the U.S. were on the verge of making an agreement. That's when the Israelis have been the most aggressive. They wanted to prevent that agreement, and they wanted the United States, who of course is massively superior to Iran militarily, to take on Iran, just like the Israelis were very happy and pushed the Bush administration to take on Iraq.
Right. Trita, thank you so very much.
Really appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Okay, Trita Parsi, Quincy Institute. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I know he's been waiting to get on here, the Master Barber. We're going to talk with him. There was a hit piece in the Tampa Bay Times on Ron DeSantis' press secretary, our Florida governor. Why? We'll talk with the Master Barber all about it.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back. By the way, we are here every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. on the Great Tantalk Radio Network. And thanks to Big Ed, you can listen to our show anytime on podcast by going to our website, OurFreedomWorks.com. OurFreedomWorks.com. Well, we know already, do we not, that the Tampa Bay Times does not like Ron DeSantis. They ran a bizarre report targeting the newly hired, recently hired press secretary of DeSantis and how she landed her job, as if somehow she did something wrong. The report obtained the email that was sent to Ron DeSantis' office back in March by Christina Pusha. Or Pushaw, I guess, P-U-S-H-A-W. She admired the way Ron DeSantis was doing his job and inquired about potential job opportunities. So here goes the Tampa Bay Times going after her. Quote, this is her. She wrote that she was inspired to move to Florida because of how the governor navigated the pandemic. She was bothered by a pervasive false narrative in the press, she said, and she said she wanted to do her part to prevent the devastation caused by socialism from happening in our country. So, the Times expose continued on to say it's unclear who in the governor's office saw her note, but it appears to have been received quite well. 6 weeks later, DeSantis offers her a job. Her salary, $120,000 per year. So what? I think it's terrific. And she's making a good buck, let's be honest. So we got the Master Barber here. Andrew, are you surprised that the Tampa Bay Times is going after the press secretary to Ron DeSantis?
First of all, Paul, I don't allow that vile, disgusting newspaper in my barbershop.
But you used to.
Okay.
A long time ago you did. Okay.
Apparently, about what you said, what did he do wrong?
Nothing.
He hired a girl that's on the line. But you know, Paul, the newspaper is good for one thing. And if they use better quality newspaper, I'd cut it in strips and use it in my bathroom.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's a little harsh. Let's put it that way.
That's what I'm saying. But anyway, yeah, let that go.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's not even worth paying attention.
It isn't. All right, so you got some other things on your mind. You go ahead.
What do you? First of all, what do you think about Mr. Cuomo getting off the hook with everything, huh?
Yeah, are you surprised?
No, I'm not surprised, and I think it's disgusting.
I mean, he's still going to be going through some of these sexual harassment deals.
He's not going to go through.
You don't think so?
He's going to get reelected of those morons.
You think so?
In New York.
Do you think he'll be reelected?
Yeah, he's going to get reelected by a landslide. Are you kidding me? Those morons up in New York don't know any better.
I was wondering, well, even some of his own Democrats are against what he was doing. Wasn't it his attorney general that came? I can't remember, but maybe it was the attorney general that even brought up the fact that he was playing footsie with the nursing homes in COVID. I thought.
Well, so what?
I know.
They're concerned, so what?
So you think that First of all, is he announcing that he's going to run again? Because there was thought that he might decide, hey, screw it, I'm not going to run again.
He's going to run again. He loves it. The guy is Satan's disciple.
Okay.
Period. Now, look at all this COVID, Delta, COVID, going crazy. You got to wear the mask in the Capitol.
I know.
But come across the southern border. Let's close our country down. We just got to keep the southern border open.
That's right.
Let all these people in with all their diseases and make sure they go to the blue states.
Exactly.
It's all a setup, Paul. And let me tell you why they're doing this, okay? The Arizona Senate just sent out their third subpoena for the routers in Arizona. Okay, now, how can they not answer the third subpoena? These people need to be arrested, don't they? They won't turn over the routers.
Okay, now, what are we talking about here with Arizona routers? What do you mean by routers?
The Maricopa County, the routers for their voting machines, okay?
Okay.
Because they got all the information they need. Now, once they got these routers, they can prove that it was hacked.
Oh, okay. Routers okay, like an internet routers.
They're not releasing them. Now, if they got nothing to hide, here's the routers, guys.
Okay. I don't know how routers work in all of this, so I can't comment on it. I do comment on it this way. I don't know why in the hell we haven't finished this whole investigation in Maricopa County.
This is the reason, Paul.
Okay.
This is the reason.
I see.
Now, they got three subpoenas from the Senate. What's the deal here? They should be held in contempt, right?
I don't know. I've lost touch because I guess I haven't seen anything on it. Are you getting continuing?
And I'll tell you another thing I heard.
All right.
Another thing I heard. You know all these shortages going on, Paul?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I happen to know a few people that work on the docks that unload this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Do you remember the gas crunch in 1974 when the tankers were sitting way offshore?
Vaguely.
Okay, well, the tankers were sitting way offshore, so the prices went up.
I remember, if you're talking about during the Carter administration and the gas line shortage.
Prices.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Well, guess what? They're telling these dock workers, hold off on unloading these. They got ships with everything we need just sitting out there. Okay, these are rumors that I'm hearing, Paul, from people that work in this field.
What would be the point of stalling the delivery of oil?
Well, that raised the price big time, didn't it? It went from $29.9 to $79.9 in those days.
Do you think that the oil companies then are in cahoots with the government or something?
Well, we're not even talking about just the oil. I'm talking about lumber, all different supplies that we have shortages on right now.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
Not just oil. This is everything. They're holding back on this stuff to bring up price. Paul, they're trying to cause all the havoc they can because they are desperate. And they're going to do everything they can to distract the people from what's going on.
Okay, now who is the they you're talking about? The Democrats?
The administration.
Yes, okay, the Biden administration.
That's right.
So the Biden administration, in your opinion, might be holding off on the delivery of supplies like lumber and the like.
It's going worldwide, too. It's not just here.
And they're doing it for what reason again? What are they doing that for?
I don't know if they're trying to break the people or what's going on.
This is called a crazy, wild-eyed conspiracy, isn't it?
Well, it could be a conspiracy.
I mean, no. Crazy. Crazy conspiracy. I mean, you really think that the Biden administration, with all its other troubles, is...
What troubles? What troubles they got?
They got a guy that can barely put two... They got a guy that can barely...
People are bending over, Paul. People are bending over for Biden. It's like I told you. If they said that freaking virus hovered at 3 feet, people would be walking on all fours at half of the people in this country.
Yeah.
Please. I know that. And
I don't think that the people are going to get back to wearing the mask. I think they will reject it.
It's not going to happen, Paul. It's not going to happen. And it's like I told you, DeSantis is going to come out smelling like a rose, or he's going to fall in a barrel of poop, one of the two.
Yeah, so I think he's going to smell like a rose. I really do.
I believe it, too, because, Paul, the deaths aren't going on. You know, it's just a scare tactic, and these people with the virus, that's all they talk about. How come I haven't heard nothing about Cuba anymore, those poor people over there, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
If it's so bad, this virus, how come he's letting all these people coming in?
That's crap. He can't. That's why I don't. You can't listen to this guy because you can't believe what he says. Because you're exactly right. The first thing you want to do if you've got an epidemic is to shut down your borders from people that are carrying the disease or maybe carrying this. So they don't give a damn. They really don't give a damn about the epidemic. This drives me crazy. And they can't answer the question.
Because there isn't one.
I know, but they can't answer the question about shutting down the border if they pretend, as in they pretend, that there is an issue with the virus. Then they would shut the border down if that was really the case.
How transparent is this administration?
About as transparent as Biden's brain is.
Okay, believe me. There's no transparency at all. They give very limited information to the people of what's going on. The only information they give them is scare tactics.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
They got to keep focusing.
Did you see his moron press conference yesterday?
I watched it.
Oh, please. The guy's a freaking living zombie. He was staring at that teleprompter. You got to get vaccine.
I'll give him one.
Your shot. You got your shot a week too early. You could have got $100. Now you're going to get nothing.
I know. Now, I'm going to give him a little bit of credit. A little earlier in the show, I said he was more awake than usual. And Ed said, well, it was probably because he had just woken up and he was still a little bit frisky. So he was a little bit.
It's either air, he got a hold of his crack, one of the two.
If he had done it about 7 or 8 o'clock at night, I'm sure he would have completely lost his way, probably wouldn't even be facing the cameras.
Well,
standing in the wrong direction.
I understand Ron DeSantis is doing a press conference sometime today, and I can't wait to see it. You see, you got Broward County, we're masking up. You know Ron is going to pull out the graphs.
Yeah, I think...
He will pull out the graphs, and I can't wait to see it.
These
people are running... They need to take their kids, put them in bubble wrap, put them in triple masks with respirators, and carry them to the bus stop. And make sure their diapers are clean.
Yeah.
What the hell is wrong with
you? By the way, speaking about all of that, should we not open up all the schools across the country?
Yes, we should.
Okay.
No question. Well, this country right now needs to go on a normalcy. They're trying to create chaos, and they're getting away with it because we're letting them.
Yeah.
And you got the media backing them. All these newscasters, give me a freaking break. COVID. There's the one political analyst, I can't think of his name, Patrick somebody, he's on Channel 13. I see that guy come in there, I just want to shoot him. Right through the television, they're driving me nuts.
You think he's a Biden sympathizer, in other words.
No question about it.
I see.
Yeah. And, you know, most of the news, even the local channels, Paul, we've got to protect this, what is wrong with you people? What is wrong with you people? Are you people that afraid of dying? You're going to do anything you can.
I think there is a big scare tactic going on.
I don't see people dropping dead in front of me, Paul.
No.
I'm taking care of an invalid 87-year-old man.
You are. Yes, you are.
Kicking. That's been living with the COVID for a year and a half. He hasn't caught nothing.
That's wonderful.
And he's got nurses, people coming in all the time. It's a scare tactic. They're full of baloney. And I tell you what. I right now believe everything that's going on with this is a fraud.
I think that is being hyped. I'll say that for sure, because they are looking. It's like ignore the man behind the curtain in The Wizard of Oz. They don't want you to look at the real problems.
Well, the real problem is this country is falling apart because of these morons, and they're trying to turn it into a socialist country, and they're sliding it in every day on the people, and the people are getting used to it more and more and more.
Yeah, I think you're right about the socialism, and it's like dipping, we've said it before, dipping the lobster in boiling water. You do it slowly, and they don't even feel it until you're dead, until it's consumed you. Huh?
And look at these lazy suckers that are trying to sue the governor for their $300 a week. We want our unemployment. And what about, the moratorium on the rent for the people. What's going on? They're going to get evicted today. Well, you know what? The poor landlords that are business people, and I happen to be one. I was fortunate. My tenants took care of everything, no problems. But what about these people that got all their money invested in real estate? They're paying their mortgages on their property while these people are slumlords.
You're right. Absolutely right. And by the way, we're going to talk about that in the next segment. It's a very good segue.
Throw their rear end in the street and then see if they go get a job.
Okay. Andrew, I love you.
Disgusting. It's disgusting.
Andrew, I love you. You are so energetic and passionate, and I cannot wait to talk with you again on Monday.
You got it, buddy. Have a good week.
All right, and the same to you, my friend. There he goes, a very excitable Andrew the Master Barber. We are going to talk about in the next segment. A host of federal virus relief programs are ending, like the moratorium on rental evictions and those extra unemployment checks. We're going to talk about it and find out, is it really a good thing to do that? So stay tuned.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more. Okay, we are here for the final segment, and some of these relief programs that the federal government decided to foist upon us, you know, like the moratorium on paying your rent, and the foreclosures, you know, there was a moratorium on foreclosures and those extra unemployment benefits. And also they had a freeze on student loan payments. Now, of course, in any kind of an economic situation, when somebody decides not to pay or is told they don't have to pay, somebody else is paying. Somebody else is paying. Because there is no such thing as a free lunch, as Milton Friedman used to say. So let's stop with that kind of an idea. Let's look at some of the things that Congress approved. One of them was the eviction moratorium. You couldn't throw somebody out of their place, their rental place, or even in their own home if they had a mortgage and were not paying it. Well, that moratorium ends tomorrow. Saturday, July the 31st, the federal ban on evictions that was issued by the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, is poised to expire tomorrow. Also, the foreclosure moratorium, that also closes tomorrow. That granted a reprieve to individuals with mortgages that were backed by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And then how about those extra unemployment benefits? We got about 26 states where this is ending. Now, this was a $300 per week extra bump from the federal government for unemployment, and we know what happened there. It kept a lot of people from going out and getting their jobs again. They stayed home. I would have stayed home if I got an extra $1,200 a month. I would have stayed home, so I understand that as well. So, there you go. All right, Ed, before we get into our top 10, we have a good one, by the way. The Olympics are drawing flies. Mm. I was watching some of it. I think there was a very well-known gymnast, a female gymnast that pulled out for good. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that helps or hurts. There was a story.
Simone Biles, yeah.
Yeah. So are you, are you watching any of the Olympics?
No, not at all.
Not anything?
No. Not at all.
Wow. Okay.
I'm a little turned off by, you know, before the Olympics started, we had that one girl that turned her back on the national anthem. And then, of course, the soccer team that took a knee. I'm not going to watch it.
I think a lot of people are like that.
That's the world stage.
Yeah. It is the height of I don't know what the word is. It's like being a traitor. And you are given all of this stuff because you live in a country where you are treated like a god. If you're an Olympic person, you're treated like a god
in the past.
They should go to China.
In the past, men like Michael Jordan and Larry Bird stood on that podium and accepted a medal, and when the anthem was played, they wept. I mean, because they were emotional. And now it's just a tool to get yourself noticed. Yeah. So
I'm going to say something I don't normally say about it. I keep it to myself. I was actually rooting against some of the teams.
I think so. A lot of people feel that way.
Because I didn't want them to win. Because I knew that there were people in their group, mm-hmm. in that particular sport, that would do that. Turn their back on the flag.
I can tell you advertisers are running for cover.
Well, they're going to demand compensation because NBC, you know, sold out. Mm-hmm. They got a lot of money. But they're going to have to do make goods on a lot mm-hmm. of that. So we'll see. All right. It's time for our top 10. We have a good one, I think. These are the top 10 countries least likely to be disrupted by climate change. Well, first of all, I don't know how much climate change will disrupt. But anyway, the countries were judged on social, economic, and political factors like social inequality. I always worry about that. Doing business and rule of law, and the University of Notre Dame conducted the study. All right? So here we go. Number 10. Number 10 is Germany. Landlocked country. But apparently they can weather the storm. Interesting. Number 9. Iceland. Social climate change. It's always cold there. I don't know what kind of climate change. If climate change came and it warmed things up, it'd be better for them. Number 8. Another coldish country, Austria, a lot of mountains and stuff. A lot of these are landlocked countries so far. Number 7. Well, Singapore. Now, Singapore is in the water, you know, surrounded by water. But they do very well, I'm sure, economically. This is why maybe Singapore is considered. Number 6. Switzerland. Switzerland, you know, managed to avoid entering World War II, but they were surrounded by countries involved. Mm. You know, they had the banking system going on there. So maybe with climate change as well. Number 5, Sweden. In fact, 5 is Sweden. I might as well just tell you. 4 is Denmark and 3 is Finland. Mm. Okay, all three of those countries, they hang up there, you know, in the northern section of Europe. Mm-hmm. And I guess because I don't know exactly how they factor in that these kind of Nordic countries are going to do well with handling any disruption in climate change, but that's what they are saying. All right, so that leaves us with number 2, New Zealand. Now that hangs south of Australia. It's a temperate kind of climate there, by the way. It gets cold. Mm-hmm. I noticed that. As we've gone along here, most of these countries are not like in real warm weather, only Singapore. All right. What do you think is number 1, Ed? Any idea?
Stay close to New Zealand, Australia.
Yeah, that's a good guess. Actually, Australia's number 13. Uh-huh. I had to go down the list a little bit. And also, just so you know, the United States came in 19th on this list. I'm going to tell you that I think a lot of liberals compiled it, all right? So let's just get that out of the way. Anyway, number 1 is Norway. You know, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Norway. Apparently, some reason they think. See, now, Norway, Sweden, and Denmark are perceived as being socialistic. They're actually capitalistic with some social programs and a high tax rate. That's the truth about it. All right. Anyway, thank you so very much. We will be back on Monday. Have a wonderful weekend. And always remember, freedom works.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Facet Wealth. I'm Steve Kathan. New findings on the Delta variant could deepen concerns about what it means for the pandemic's next few months. CBS's Dr. David Agus says the CDC analysis indicates the variant is aggressive.
In this report, they call the Delta variant as infectious as chickenpox. What we're seeing is that it's more infectious than most of the viruses that we've seen, including the 1918 influenza.
The report says those who get infected with Delta are more likely to get a severe case, and fully vaccinated people can spread it as easily as those who haven't gotten shots. Now to Chicago, CBS's Charlie DeMar is covering the music fest Lollapalooza, where health precautions are being taken.
Vaccination card in your hand!
Festival attendees must show proof of vaccination or negative COVID test within the last 3 days.
If they didn't have those restrictions in there, I'd be a lot less likely to go.
It makes me feel safer.
The festival draws around 100,000 people each day, tightly packed crowds with few masks and sight.
Some tense moments at the Olympics for the U.S. women's soccer team against the Dutch.
This was a knockout match. If the U.S. had lost, the U.S. soccer team would be going home right now. But the U.S. survives. The U.S. wins on penalty kicks. It was 2-2 after regulation. It remained that way after extra time. And then they went to penalty kicks. And the winning kick was from Megan Rapinoe. The U.S. women began to celebrate. And they now move on to the semifinal match. The U.S. women still have hope for a gold medal. Steve Futterman, CBS News, at the Summer Olympics in Tokyo.
Early arrival today in the U.S. for more than 200 people from Afghanistan, translators and others who helped American troops during the war and their families. U.S. Ambassador Ross Wilson says there will be more in the weeks ahead.
This White House initiative aims to ensure the safe relocation of Afghans who have worked for the United States over the course of the past 2 decades.
They're checking on storm damage this morning in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, after rare tornadoes.
Mitch Berlinski lives along the Delaware River in Washington Crossing, Pennsylvania.
We saw like a funnel cloud starting over the river, then it went across the river and headed to Ewing.
Not far up the river, Jesse Samaji says he weathered the storm.